Good morning, good morning. That's the signal to get started. It's 10:10 on Monday morning, September the 11th. We are happy to have you here today for Coffee with the Coder, episode 20. And several of us are gathered together from various states. We're excited to share some questions and answers from our expert team and to invite you along for the next mugging. Today's official Coffee with the Coder mug will be drawn in a drawing at the end of today's episode, and we'll be seeking out that person to send them an official mug, and just for fun, we call that a mugging. And we've got some wonderful questions we're excited to talk to you about, and we've got Paula Digby and some of her experts on the line with us today, but I think Paula's going to take the most of the questions for us. Hi, Paula.
Good morning, Pam. And thank you, everyone across the country, for joining us today. I know, if you don't know, Pam's in Florida. I am in Atlanta. Christina's in Indiana. And several other folks in Georgia as well. So just expected some pretty significant weather challenges this morning, and we didn't know if we would have internet or phone challenges as well. So thank you for joining us. And, again, we have backups and backups, and we're going to go ahead and get into today's questions. And so I can't recall right now, Christine, are you throwing those questions to me, or will Pam be reading?
I've got the first one.
Perfect.
All righty. This one's coming from Kay, and I don't have the ability to tell where Kay's from, but thank you, Kay, for this question. We're having a discussion regarding the physician procedure CPT code and the hospital SDC observation CPT codes always matching. We use, she says, 3M, and we can use their helpline for coding questions. So she gives us an operative report that was sent to the physician officer's office coders and the hospital coders, but they don't match. The compliance department is concerned that the codes should always match. What do you say? Now, I don't know how much of the specifics you want to go into, but I think that was the main part of the question, Paula.
Yeah, that is the main part of the question, really is, and the SDC is like same-day surgery, so outpatient surgery. And so the question, it is from a hospital facility Kay is at, and she is really looking at an OBGYN-type procedure in the operative report that she sent. And so her question was, it appeared to her that her compliance department was saying, well, every time you code a case, it should match what the physician codes in his or her office. And I am familiar with Kay, and I'm familiar with her hospital, and I do know that, the physician's offices are connected to the hospital, so there's a more opportunity to have those discussions back and forth than the freestanding physician office versus the facility. And Kay, so that to answer your question, they will not always match. And in the case that was sent, particularly, you have different coding rules and different payment rules for the facility or the hospital versus the physician office. So there will be sometimes, not always, sometimes they will match 100%, but you will have other occasions, and it depends on the particular procedure. I can't say 100% of the time, you know, all these procedures will always match or all those procedures will always match, but in some situations, the codes will match, and in some, they will not. In the case that Kay sent, the recommendation by 3M was that they would not match, and I agree with that recommendation. And if you are having specific challenges related to specific surgical procedures, you know, perhaps we can review those on a different Coffee with the Coder episode. But in this case, I think the gist of the question was, should they always match on the facility side as well as the physician side? Should the CPT codes always match? And you always, it's probably pretty easy to recognize that in many, many occasions on the facility side, you're going to have additional HCPCS codes that you won't have on the physician side, but even though also the CPT codes may not match as well. So Pam or Christine, got question number two?
Yes, we do. Thank you, Paula. This one's coming from Florida, from Michelle. So, Michelle, I hope you're out there this morning listening in. And if not, of course, we're going to post this recording tomorrow if I can get my internet back by then. and you'll be able to hear it. But Michelle says, if you have a pregnant woman in for a threatened abortion, she has a history of gestational diabetes mellitus from the last pregnancy, but they're not treating her for that this time, do you code the pre-existing DM, the gestational DM, or neither?
Yeah, no. You may not be aware that a patient can have diabetes during one pregnancy, but not have it during a second pregnancy. I actually was that patient. So during my first pregnancy, I had gestational diabetes, and in my second pregnancy, I did not. So if the patient, and it may be a situation where you need to query the physician, because, you know, you might have the information to see the patient's, you know, documentation related to the lab values and things like that. But I would definitely query if it's questionable. But if the physician does not say the patient has a current gestational diabetes, you're not going to report that as a current condition. So just want to make sure. And again, patients don't have to have gestational diabetes during every pregnancy. Each pregnancy is different. Now, they certainly could, but if the documentation is not clear, we need to query the physician to see what the current status of that diabetes is.
Perfect. Okay, thank you, thank you. And now we're going to move up to Michigan. Gina is in an inpatient rehab, and this is a lot of involvement, so I'm not really sure if I need all of this, but let me just throw it out to you, and you'll help me with it, I'm sure, because I know you guys had to research this already. An inpatient rehab patient had a TBI, that's a traumatic brain injury, in 1992. Oddly enough, they have a recent diagnosis of NPH and cognitive impairment. The acute side does not make the link between the old TBI and these impairments, but the rehab provider does. The H&P says reason for admission, NPH, SP, VP shunt, CNS dysfunction with weakness, lower extremity, and upper parastenosis. Evidence of large ventricles, VP shunt inserted on this date. What would the etiologic be? And she's got some conflicting guidelines to consider, so I wasn't sure how much of those to share with you.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about those conflicting guidelines. She did, Gina did ask one of the forum question. One of the very well-known companies that help with coding related to inpatient rehab facilities, and on one of the forums, the question was late effects coding for TBI, and it says, let me read this thread here. It says, should we use late effects coding for the etiologic diagnosis and an IGC of 2.22 for the following case? The patient fell down the stairs and was admitted to IRF from acute care with a traumatic brain injury, 2.22, as the IGC and the emergency department, and this was back in the ICD-9 world, reported 852.20 traumatic subdural hemorrhage. Discharge home after the IRF stay. The patient was readmitted to acute and now on IRF with diagnosis of normal pressure hydrocephalus. Do we code this second rehab stay as 2.22 IGC with an etiologic diagnosis of 907.0 for late effects of intracranial hemorrhage? He was only at home between the first and second rehab stay for a little over 2 weeks. Thanks. And then the recommendation was, if the physician's documentation has linked the event to the original injury, you are correct to go with the IGC 2.22 and the late effect code for the etiology. The hydrocephalus would be a comorbid condition. However, if the documentation is not there to support the event resulted from the TBI, then IGC 2.1 for the hydrocephalus would be used as the etiology. And then it gives some guidelines following. And then there was also, you might also report the etiologic, a different etiologic. So here's my stance on that. I don't see that as conflicting guidelines at all, because in the previous setting, when this question was answered, we only had the ability to report one etiologic diagnosis, right? And now we have the ability to report three. If there is clear association between the diagnoses that the physician is stating, and the coding rules indicate that you would report both conditions, you know, as far as sequencing, and then you would report them both as the etiologic. Whereas in the situation of, you know, the physician not associating those conditions, you would, exactly as I agree with the other recommendation, if the physician associated the NPH to the TBI, then you're going to report them differently than if he did not associate, because then it would look like more the focus of the treatment and the reason for the visit may not be associated as a late effect of that TBI, and we really need that physician's clarification to tell us whether or not it is. And if there is no clarification and there is no association, you're going to report the normal pressure hydrocephalus with the 2.1 as the IGC rather than the 2.22. And I think, let me see, there was another question she had in follow-up to this. She says, if you're using both etiologic and the association of the conditions were due to the TBI, would you use 2.22? And I agree, yes, you would, because it is a late effect of the TBI.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, and I don't think I need to go on any further because it's 10:21, so I'm going to go ahead and stir up the names in my hat. Christine, did you do that, or am I good for that?
I've got Michelle.
Yay! Awesome. Well, I'm hoping that you're live today, Michelle, but if you're not, then you're going to hear this on the replay. And thank you so much, everyone, for joining us for episode 20. Today, we're very eager to get some more questions for the coming up episodes. We still have a bank of them, but we're just eager to look at your questions. So be sure to hop on over to aq-iq.com and look for Coffee with Decoder under the questions tab and send in your question, too, and you could be the next winner of a Coffee with Decoder mugging. So, Christine, it's time to wrap it all up, and that puts episode 20 into the queue. The posting of it will be tomorrow because I don't have any way of getting internet today. But thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to hearing you on episode 21, which is in 2 weeks on September 25th.